Monday. Open wide dev fans.
Get ready
to stuff your face with JavaScript, CSS, node modules, barbecue tips, Git workflows, breakdancing, soft skills, web development. The hastiest, the craziest, the tastiest web development treats. Coming in hot, here is Wes, Barracuda, Boss, and Scott, El Toro Loco, Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax. In this Monday hasty treat, we're going to be talking about hosting and web servicing, web services pricing explained. So a lot of times we head to a new service and it says, this is going to cost you 0.3 cents per who's it's and what's it's. And you might just be like, ooh, I don't know what that is. So we're going to be talking all about the different types of pricing that different services can charge you, what they all mean, and how that affects your bottom line. My name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a web developer from Denver, Colorado. And with me, as always, is the Wes Boss.
Hey, I'm excited about this show. It's not going to be the most fun show ever, but this
is
something
I'm thrilling.
it's true. Your mind is going to be blown. But like, especially with like things like a Heroku, they'd say like, how many dinos do you need?
Yes,
I'm like,
yes.
I don't know. What?
I would like one dinosaur, please. Yeah. And it's got to be really cool. Okay.
How many Dino Dinos did a Dino Dino need? So like sometimes you look at these pricing pages, like, I don't know. How much is it going to be?
Yeah.
You know, and now that I'm I don't know, I understand it a little bit better. I thought, let's tell the people how it works.
Yeah. Some of it was like with AWS, it's just sort of like, well, I'll sign up and see how much it costs after the end of the first month.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be using that much of it. So it's not going to break the bank. So let's get into it. The first topic that we had here would be a lot of places charge via the minute or time that you're going to be using something. And this is oftentimes with servers that get spun up for serverless functions because those functions that are only run for that period of time. And then there's that computer interface is able to be used for something else, right? The classic almost like shared server type of thing, but just different. And so because of that, you're paying for the amount of time that that function is running and that amount of time that that service is being used rather than the fact that that service needs to exist 24/7.
Yeah, these ones for me are at least probably the easiest to estimate other than just paying a certain amount per month for a specific amount of resources. And that's just because like you can literally run your functions and then you can do some quick back of the napkin math as to like how long did that take? All right, 300 milliseconds or 100 milliseconds. And then how many times will that be hit? Maybe a user will hit that page 100 times a year and then you have 40 users and you can pretty quickly do that. This is pretty popular in serverless space because you are literally paying for time. You just a couple seconds of a server and then somebody else gets to use that server after you. It's also popular in using graphics. Like you can also do this for graphics cards, AI, machine learning, things like that. You pay by the minute or by the second for the amount of time that you're using on those servers.
Yeah, and they'll scale with the amount of load you're putting it under. You're asking it to do a big, heavy thing. It's going to cost you a bigger, heavier dollars than if you were doing something that was really light because it's inherently going to take less time. But in the same way, this one is also kind of the same thing. I mean, they're all facets of the same thing, if you think about it. But in this regard, the next one would be by resources. And how many resources, not via time, will you be charged? And this can be the common VPS model that you've seen for a long time, and that stands for Virtual Private Server, something like DigitalOcean, where you're paying for the price of the virtual private server, and you are paying for the stats on it. You're paying for the resources, as in how much CPU can this thing handle? How much RAM does this thing have? How much storage space does this server have? And then as you need more, you can always scale up and many other container-based things. So this is how Level Up Tutorials is hosted. We're hosted on Meteor Galaxy, and we pay by the resources. We have auto-scaling in case we get hit too hard, and it can scale up our containers to use more resources if we need it, and all the good things that you are used to with that sort of flow.
Yeah, if you are used to also like a DigitalOcean droplet or... what's the other one? Linode is another popular one.
Rackspace,
things like that. You say, all right, I need a gig of RAM and this much GPU. And
yep.
Disk space is not necessarily a big one anymore because disk space is it's so cheap, but one thing you do want to look at there is, are they SSDs?
Yeah.
Because when they do read the file from that disk, it needs to be fast, right? That was the, yeah. That's how DigitalOcean sort of got onto the scene, is that they started as a SSD first hosting company.
Where did you host before DigitalOcean?
I was on Media Temple.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. Media Temple was a really big one. And then I had a GoDaddy server for a long, long time.
Ooh.
I still have a Bluehost server.
I do too.
Yeah. Those like GoDaddy Bluehost companies that have just like PHP LAMP stack, they like, once they get somebody in there, it's gravy because it's hard to move.
Yeah. And I think they know that because they pay out a decent amount for referrals.
Companies.
Like, yeah.
I think like with Bluehost, I used to have affiliate links before I denounced them, and they would pay like $100 per sign up. And they know that's because somebody that pays is going to be with them for 8-10 years or something like that.
Yeah, that's what they're banking on.
The next one is Perdino. This is popular with Heroku, and you may hear like, I don't know, I think other hosting companies have this similar vein. And essentially, it's just a virtual Linux server like we were talking about earlier. But then they will give you a specific amount of CPU and memory as well. I'm not sure why they call it a dyno and not just what you're getting.
What does the dyno even stand for in Heroku?
That's a good question.
Because that's the first time that I had ever heard that language. And I wonder if it is just like marketing. We need our, you know, AWS is so heavy in that, where everything is the AWS version of whatever it is.
Yeah. And the cool thing about Heroku and all these other platforms is that you can just add more dynos and it will just make your app faster, because the way that Heroku works is your apps are stateless and you can just run your app on multiple servers. And that's why, like, if you try to use Heroku and you upload an image, you might come back to find out like a week later that your images are gone. And that's because they don't have any state. If any files that are uploaded to Heroku will just be cleaned up. You have to put them somewhere else, like a S3 bucket or something like that. And that's great because they will launch more versions of your app and then they'll run it on a load balancer for you. Maybe that's why they have a special name for it.
My understanding is it might be that because Heroku was like the first big, primarily used one to do the container-based scaling up and scaling down, I think they just called them dynos before they were called containers. And then after they got started calling containers, I see in quotes, it says that on their site, it says a dyno, which is isolated lightweight Linux containers. So it doesn't explain it as being anything other than that.
Yeah. One other thing that Heroku has is they have free dyno hours. So that was another weird thing to me. When I was coming from a traditional server, you pay for the server, you get a box somewhere and it's running. And then they would be like, how many hours do you need? And I'd be like, all of them? 24?
Yeah.
It should always be up.
24, please.
And I never understood it. And now I get it, because the way that it works, like I said, is that it's very similar to serverless functions, is that that box will spin up. It will turn on when people are visiting your website. And then when you're no longer using it, it will turn off. And then when somebody hits the website again, it will turn on. And that's the cold start that you hear often. And that's good to know, because sometimes if you have a website, you could host 100 websites on there and you might not get any traffic to them because they're just side projects, things like that. And if they're not getting a whole lot of traffic, then they're not costing Heroku really anything in terms of resources to run them.
Next is by bandwidth. And bandwidth is the amount of data that is transferred. Because we often think about like data in terms of like storage, but we do work in a medium that's primarily on the web. And on the web, one of the biggest things that you track is how much data is sent. And that's really what bandwidth is if you have big, heavy files and you have to send them, then you're going to be paying more in bandwidth fees because it costs money to send them. ISPs are currently exploiting by data caps. Amount of bandwidth that is being traveled is what's going to be the thing that's tracked there. What services in your mind do you see as companies offhand, do you know, that charge by bandwidth?
The one that I use is Backblaze B2, which I use to do all the downloads for my video courses. And so they have like a couple things. Like I pay to have my video files on their server. So for a terabyte, it's $5 a month. And then if you're uploading a terabyte, it's another $5 a month. And if you're deleting a terabyte, it's another $5 a month. So they charge you for any time that they either hold data, you upload it, you download it, or you delete it. Or sometimes they refer to it as ingress, where that you're transferring data to them. Like, I think MUX is another one that will charge you for ingress. And so that's another thing to think of, because like, yeah, it might cost me, I'm not saying this specifically for MUX, but for one of these platforms, it might cost me $100 a month to do this. But if I wanted to move over everything, I've got terabytes and terabytes of data that to move in, especially like if you think about like a hosting platform like Cloudinary, right? Like, I don't know what Cloudinary uses behind the scenes, whether it's Amazon S3, but like, let's say they wanted to move from Amazon S3 to whatever the Azure image hosting version is, then they would have to calculate, okay, we've got 70 terabytes of photos from the last year. If we wanted to move those all over, that would be a pretty penny just to get it into the server, let alone people requesting these images and downloading. So that's something probably most people listening to this podcast don't have to necessarily think about that. But if you have a large application with lots of user content, then you would be probably thinking about that.
Yeah. And some of these things you need to take an entire course on to know how much you're going to pay for the thing. Because it is funny, I'm looking at like MUX's payment page, and granted, they do a good job of this, but it's for encoding MUX's $0.5 a minute. So 5 cents a minute to encode. And then for storage, it's 0.3 cents a minute to store them. And then to stream it, it's 0.13 cents per minute. So like, that's three like fractions of a dollar spread out over three different things. And so you might be like, oh, I have no idea how I'm going to pay for this, like what I'm going to pay for the service. But that's why a lot of these things end up giving you video calculators. So like MUX has a really neat video calculator where you can say, all right, my average video is, let's say my average video is 10 minutes long. I'm going to do 25 monthly uploads. And then the average video view count, I don't know, the default is 75,000. So that's fine. And then you're going to be paying $550 a month to do that. So like, hey, that tells you pretty explicitly what that's going to cost. But you have to know that information going into it. You might be able to do some like calculations to say, okay, maybe in the future, this is what it will look like. But at the end of the day, you do need to have some information about what your traffic should look like to be able to calculate a lot of these.
Yeah, or even like another way to think about it is, if you think about like what a user would do, like an average user would use in terms of traffic, you can think about that. And then you hopefully, if you have a business, you can figure out what is a user worth to you. And then you can say, okay, like for me, I know—
users are priceless. I cannot put a price on users there.
Yeah, like if a user watches an entire course, I know how much that's going to cost me and I know how much I'm making. And that allows me to make calculations based on other things like that, based on like how much free courses can I offer to stream as well, because I have to pay for bandwidth on that as well. What else do we have here? By database calls, if you've got like a database service, they will often charge you either by entries, like how many entries do you want to store in a database, or how many calls will you be making to that specific database. Again, for me, that's really hard to calculate, because like, how many database calls are you making for a specific page? Sometimes it's six or seven. If you have joins, that's another call, right? But in most cases, they're peanuts.
If you have GraphQL, it could end up being 30 calls without you even knowing.
Yeah, it's true. Like, you can sometimes forget about the database underneath GraphQL. What else? Users. This is more of a SaaS thing, but it can bleed into hosting. How many users are able to log into your platform and manage your specific app or whatever? And sometimes you have to be on a specific tier in order to get either features or amount of users that can access specific things.
Yeah, and GitHub works that way. And I would call GitHub, certainly a SaaS, but it is like a web service. We use it for our entire pipeline. And so we have to pay for more minutes in our pipeline, but we also have to pay per user for our API. Although I don't know how many of the features we would lose if we just went to the free private account thing that you can do now, because we have a team of a few people. So I don't know. Maybe you should look at that. But doesn't Netlify also charge by seats? I thought they did, but I'm looking at their... because I feel like we had to pay for additional seats in our account to get team support.
Yeah, you get one team member on their free one. And then on the pro account, it's $19 per member per month. So if you want more people to be able to manage your application or see logs and things like that, then you could pay for that. I don't think that like every team member would need that though, just because you get most of the info about a build will be put into a GitHub comment on a pull request, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's kind of an interesting one as well. The way kind of around that, I see a lot of people do that is they just share the login, and especially with something like Firefox.
I was going to say with like 1Password, because that's what we do. We just share, not of all of our services. Granted, we're paying for a lot of team services, but we do share services to some with 1Password, and it makes it really nice because you have a team shared 1Password thing and everybody's got the passwords and you get autofill and whatever. Yeah, I mean, easy.
One little thing that I use is Firefox containers or container tabs.
Oh, I haven't used these. Yeah.
And it's awesome because I can just open up a container tab for something else and just go to youtube.com. And I'm just signed into youtube.com as the one that I'm sharing with everybody. And I don't have to like log in and log out or open up an incognito tab and log in. So you get all the benefits of that. And I think in Chrome, you have to open an entire second browser. But Firefox allows you to have container tabs. So just that one tab will be, and you have your own cookies and your own sign in, stuff like that. That's I really like that.
This is sort of unrelated, but kind of related. Did you see that? Like, I saw a screenshot of like Chrome grouped tabs. Have you seen this?
I get it. It's a gray.
Yeah. Do you have that in your Chrome?
I have it. Every time I open Chrome, I'm not using Chrome as my daily driver, but every time I use it, I'm like, what is this gray line? And then I finally figured out that's what it was.
I haven't opened actual Chrome in a while, and I know Brave is like kind of different, like because I don't have those things in Brave here. So I wonder if we're going to get container windows in Chrome.
You can turn it off, but I don't particularly like it. Although I don't know, maybe I'm. I wonder if it is coming to Chrome because they're doing that.
It sort of seemed like a preface to me, but I'm pulling that out of nowhere. So
that's where most of our information comes from. next we have here is by apps. How many apps can you host? DigitalOcean's app platform does this now where instead of paying for resources, although you can increase the resources on a specific app, it's by app. So for me, I can grab a DigitalOcean droplet. And if you want to run all of the Nginx stuff yourself, all of the certification, the certs yourself, all of the renewing of the certs, if you want to run that all yourself, you can run as many apps as you want on a single DigitalOcean droplet. And like if they get too popular, then it will slow down, right? But DigitalOcean's app platform is by the app. So you pay for $5 for every single app that you have. And if like for me, I have back end and front end on one of the apps I was working on. And in that case, it would be $10. And that's just the price you pay, I think, for all of the ease and benefits that come along with that type of thing.
It really bummed me out that you can't use Cloudflare with DigitalOcean's app platform.
Yeah, yeah. Really we should do a whole show on the DigitalOcean app platform because it is awesome. But yeah, they're so ingrained with what they do, you just can't use Cloudflare. And for a lot of people, both for security standpoint and for just like the stats that they give you, they don't let you do that.
Also, the amount of like if you already have something that exists on a platform that's using Cloudflare, you might have some things that are pretty not necessarily tightly integrated in, but like some things that you might be relying on then. Like the DNS stuff in Cloudflare is way better than a lot of other DNS providers. Like you can do neater things with like different types of alias records that aren't necessarily like real types of records, or maybe even like we have redirects set up all the way at the Cloudflare level. And that to me would be a bummer to lose. Because I looked into this app platform and it's pretty sick other than that.
Yeah, it seems like I know Netlify says if you use Cloudflare with Netlify, you lose some of the, I forget what it is, you lose some of the edge benefits.
Magic.
Because they don't have control over the DNS. So in order to make it as good as possible, I think Vercel does this too. But I think in both cases, you can, knowing that you're giving up some of their edge benefits, then you still can use it. And with DigitalOcean, it just says, not going to work. I bet they'll change that though, because that's a huge thing for people.
I was going to say also by apps in a different sort of way to look at this. They're like Heroku had a thing where you could add apps to your app, you know, to your dyno. Do you remember, like, you can, like, one-click add-on services to your app?
Oh, and yeah.
I'm using the word app in a totally different way here.
Like a database or what?
Yeah, you could pop in, like, an M. And I always thought that was kind of interesting, but I always got confused with, like, where is this thing? Like, is this the ownership of my app? Like,
I think it's just a tight integration with other.
It's just a, like, tight integration.
Prisma did this too, where you could, like, quickly create a database on another service.
Yeah.
And I really like that because, like, it's still on this other service, which you like to use, but you don't have to, like, sign up and get API keys and users and all that stuff. You can just do it from one dashboard. I don't think that was anything other than that. Although I haven't been a huge Heroku user. I've done lots of demo apps on Heroku, but I've never hosted a production app on Heroku.
We hosted Level Up on Heroku for, like, maybe a couple years. I only moved it to Meteor Galaxy because I wanted to help support Meteor Development Group, and it costs the same. Like, it wasn't any more or less expensive, but it's like, okay, Heroku has their money. You know, Meteor Developer Group could not necessarily use the money, but maybe that money could go back into the development of the platform that I'm using rather than some other service, you know.
Last one we have here is just by work. The one that pops out here is Cloudinary. They do both bandwidth, obviously, because they're images, but then they also give you a certain number of transforms. So if you need to resize an image or convert from JPEG to PNG, that's a transform. I mean, you do that once. You have, like, scott.png, you want to turn it to a JPEG, you transform it. And then the next person that requests scott.jpeg, you don't do the transform again unless you're changing something about it, width or the height or the quality or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of cool because you think about, like, resources on their end. My favorite way, just looking at all of these different ways, my favorite way that is done is when you can just, like, tell me how much it's going to be a month and just hope that me as a user doesn't cost you more money than you're bringing in, right? Like, sometimes I look at these pricing pages and I'm just like, I have no clue what this means to me. Obviously, it means a lot to you because you're trying to calculate how much a user will cost in terms of how many resources they're using and transforms and all that stuff. But I, as a user, just want to know how much is it going to be per month generally for the type of app that I want to run on. It's obviously a hard thing to do, but that's my big fan when something just costs a certain amount and you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out how much it costs.
Right. You got the chalkboard out, you got all your equations, you're doing the math. I actually really I love a good calculator in that regard. And I think to shout out Mux once more, Mux's calculator is very good for what it is. It tells you exactly, I mean, they give you sliders, they make it really easy. It like feels very helpful. Like they're trying to help you make that decision. And when I first talked to the Mux folks, they said they launched the calculator so that people would realize how cheap Mux was, not so that they could see how much they were going to be paying. I mean, obviously it is, but like that seemed like to be the message was like that people think we're too expensive and we want you to easily see that we're not too expensive. And I thought that was a really neat way to put it. That's another service that's hard to calculate because they do the transforms sort of like Cloudinary does, right? Where like if you ask for a 1080p version, it's transcoding chunks of that on the fly. It's pretty cool.
The last one I'm just looking at here is what does Cloudflare Workers cost? Because that's kind of serverless functions, but it's also like edge functions. It's its own sort of thing.
We should have an episode about like what are some projects that you could use like edge workers for, essentially.
That would be fun.
A little bit more generally.
I like it. And they are 50 cents per million requests per month with a minimum charge of $5 a month. So 50 cents per million requests seems cheap. but like, again, requests, not visits. Because like somebody who visits your website might have 20 requests. You got a couple CSS files. You got 6 versions of jQuery, 18 plugins. You got that every one of those is a request, right?
Yeah.
But and also they only have up to 50 milliseconds of CPU time. So if you're doing anything that takes more than 50 milliseconds, then it won't fit into a worker. And that's because the workers sit in front of your website from being loaded, I believe. So cool. I might be wrong on that, but I've used it a few times. I thought that was interesting to see how they price theirs.
Yeah, this has been very illuminating. And again, if you have a good calculator, good pricing calculator, share it with us on Twitter. I want to see some of these pricing calculators. They are very fascinating to me. Those also kind of make for fun little easy JavaScript projects too. If you look at some of those pricing calculators and say, oh, this would be some simple math and some form inputs, might be something neat to try to experiment with and make something fun.
Yeah, totally agree. I've been working on a mortgage calculator because a lot of the mortgage calculators out there are either they sell your soul to privacy people because and then you get ads for mortgages all the time, or they are not. Canadian mortgages are a bit different than American mortgages, so the math is not exactly the same. So I've been trying to like make my own with like no trackers, and I like working on calculators. It's fun.
So in Canadian math, do you use A for a variable rather than X?
Yeah,
it's a pretty good joke, right?
A big old A, and we report the amount in loonies.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So you could just have like a pond full of geese, and every time you slide it, more geese get added to the pond.
Yeah, exactly. And there's no wondering if you'll lose your house if you break your leg.
Yes, there's right. That's a little bit more on the bleak side of things, but yes,
we'll stick with the geese. Yeah, lots of geese in this one.
Yeah.
All right. This I thought this was going to be a 10-minute episode. I was like, oh, Scott, we'll just do a quick one explaining the differences, and it turned a little tasty. So let's wrap it up.
Wrap it up. Well, thank you so much for watching, and we will see you on Wednesday.
Peace.
Peace. Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.